Welcome to the 2016 WCHL Community Forum, presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Our annual forum features Chapelboro's movers and shakers debating the big issues affecting our community and you. And it begins now.
Orange County is a growing community, but in what way should we be growing? What are the obstacles to new growth, and what, if anything, should we do to address those? Our topic this hour is development. Following up on our previous panels, I'm Aaron Keck, once again your moderator, and we are joined this hour by six distinguished panelists. First of all, rejoining us this hour, Chapel Hill Economic Development Director Dwight Bassett and Chapel Hill Carborough Chamber President Aaron Nelson. Thanks to both of you for rejoining us.
Oh, we're glad to be here. Thanks, Aaron. Sorry I got distracted.
There's a lot going on in this room that you all out there don't
know. The hand signals,
y'all.
You wouldn't believe the hand signals.
Joining us also from the Carborough Board of Aldermen, Jackie Giss. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
From the Chapel Hill Town Council, Nancy Oates. Thank you.
Thank you.
Developer from East West Partners, Ben Perry. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Aaron.
And finally, last but not least, from CHALT, the Chapel Hill Alliance for a Livable Town community member, David Schwartz. Thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here, Aaron.
And our topic this hour is development. A lot to talk about, of course, and a lot of facets to deal with, some of which we won't necessarily cover in this hour. So if you're listening out there and you've got a question or a comment for our panelists, send us a tweet or send a tweet. Use the hashtag WCHLForum. And we'll pick that up and get that on the air, your question or your comment, as soon as we can. And just been told that WCHL Forum is now officially trending on Twitter, so we're having a good day today, apparently. A lot of developments here in our community, and just to run down the list, Obie Creek still in the conversation, Ephesus Fordham obviously still with conversations about the future of that district, Carolina Square going up in downtown Chapel Hill. There's a new hotel there. There's a new hotel in Carborough. The Legion Road property is still up for discussion, and I could go on for quite a while before we run through the list. So let me open the floor to everyone and just sort of run around the table from right to left. So we'll start with Jackie Gist. What do you see as being the biggest development when it comes to development in our community in the year 2016?
Well, one thing that's happened is that there were a lot of things in on the drawing boards and kind of in process when 08 hit. And then money dried up, so things weren't built. And now that money over the past 2 years or so has become more available, then all of a sudden things that had been approved, at least in my town, are happening. So it looks like there's a lot happening all at once, but it's really, yes, it is happening at once, and it would have been spaced out more had the recession not hit and money had been available. We have Shelton Station, which is currently under construction, and that's kind of jarring when you drive by and you're passing a mill house, and we'll get another hotel soon, and other projects are being proposed. But the big change is that there's some money available now.
Do you see people, and sort of following up on that, in Carborough, there's been a lot of recent change, especially at 300 East Main Street. There's so much that's happened and so much more that's happening. Are people, hear from people in the community, are they excited about it? Are they apprehensive about it?
Yes.
Okay.
It depends on who you're talking to. When I came to Carborough in 1976, there were 5,000 people. I would like Carborough to look just like it looked when I came here in 1976. I'd like me to look like I looked in 1976. But neither of those is going to happen, you know. I think we're controlling the appearance of our growth. Our five-story is good. I think, you know, I voted against five stories. I've gotten over it. But 300 Main is where that needs to happen. It can handle that kind of density. So people like that.
Aaron Nelson?
I think Jackie put that exceptionally well. Everybody wants the town to look like it did the year they got here, same as their university. They want to be the same size as the year they graduated, but things change over time. 300 East Main is just incredible in downtown Carborough. It reminds me how infrequently somebody says, I told you that would be terrible. Nobody ever says that. Mm-hmm. They say it'll be terrible at first, but when they're fighting it, but very rarely I told you that would be terrible. And so it's an exciting time. I think downtown, our Carolina Square project is probably the most exciting. It has the opportunity to be Our American Tobacco, a sticky and interesting outdoor dining enlivened space that brings families, and it's got workers, and it's got housing, it's got public space. It's going to be a really wonderful bridge between East and West Franklin Street, and so that's the project in 2016 that I'm most excited about.
Nancy Ertz?
I would have to disagree that people want the town to look like what it did when they moved here. I talk to a lot of different people who move here from other places and want to bring some ideas from where they used to live to Chapel Hill, and I think that that's really good, and it keeps the town fresh and alive. When we talk about growth and development, oftentimes we focus on residential growth and development, and yet we heard in this segment right before this about jobs, and all of these people who live here have to work somewhere, and I would like us to focus on attracting more businesses rather than more people, because I don't want us to turn into a bedroom community of wealthy white folks.
I want to follow up on this before I forget. What are some of the ideas that you're hearing from people about bringing ideas in from other communities?
The walkability, for one thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dwight Bassett, you were nodding earlier.
So I think that the most exciting thing that I see is we've gone on for decades and had a brain drain in Chapel Hill. People who went to UNC are almost forced to leave. A few stay. They accept jobs paying less, not in their field, just so they can stay in this community. And I think as we move into the future and we talk about job creation, it creates a very different scenario than where we are now, because if we focus on creating those internships and those job opportunities, we can capture a younger generation. We can capture the future Chapel Hill. We can capture people's children to stay here and not be forced to go to Durham, Raleigh, or to other states for jobs. So I think that's probably the most exciting thing to me, is we're at a time where we can focus on job creation, because we're beginning to see space built to accommodate those opportunities.
Ben Perry.
Yeah, kind of to continue what Dwight said, I'm excited to see how some of these projects have been approved, especially in Chapel Hill, kind of come together. You know, Dwight's job is always a lot harder when there's not an approved project ready to come out of the ground. You know, when you're talking to a business, it's like, okay, well, let's find you a site. Okay, well, now let's embark on a two-year entitlement process. All right, well, now let's embark on a two-year development process. And, I can't plan my business 5 years out on space. So, you know, now some projects are approved, still got to get them built. And, those are coming through. But I think it's exciting. I think we're going to start to see that.
David Schwartz.
So I live up. I live up in the Briarcliff neighborhood near Eastgate and West Plaza and Village Plaza. And so what we have seen recently is a lot of activity in the Ephesus Fordham district that was created back in 2014. And I think that the first project out of the ground in the Ephesus Fordham district is what's now called the Alexis Apartments on South Elliott Road. And as that thing goes up, I think a lot of folks in town have been sort of unpleasantly surprised at the scale that is assuming, and concerned that it doesn't really fit in with the with the surroundings. Mm-hmm. It's not quite what we had in mind when we embarked upon the Ephesus Fordham redevelopment. So I'm interested in the steps that the town council and the staff are now taking to try to do some course corrections, try to take some input from the various citizen advisory boards, get a designer on board, and make sure that the projects that are approved and that get built in Ephesus Fordham going forward are a little bit more in line with what we'd like to see. And then one of the other problems in the Ephesus Fordham plan that was passed is that it was always the intention to create some additional green space, some park space, to have a green gathering space in that district, because the way it was developed in the 60s and 70s didn't have that. But it's going to be hard to create that green space in the district proper, now that the land values have gone up a lot. So we have an opportunity to get a nice piece of parkland right across from the Ephesus Fordham District in what's now the American Legion property. So I'm excited at the discussions that are being had about what might happen with that property.
And a lot of those conversations have continued and shifted since the 2015 election. So thoughts from the rest of the panel on how the conversation has developed. Aaron Nelson?
Well, I think it's premature. It is. That building is at its ugliest right now.
We hope.
Right. So the reason that you show baby pictures after your wife's holding the baby and not the process of the baby is it is much more attractive when it's born. So let's let it be built. But some folks said, you know, they don't. In fact, part of it is going to be covered and around. I just remember the reaction to the beautiful hotel in downtown Carrboro while it was under construction.
We had to work a long, long time and arm wrestle with those folks to make it a beautiful hotel.
That's true, but while it was going up, the horror reaction to it, same for 140 West Franklin, same for, we built some things. So we have a district that is a year and a half old on a 30-year build-out strategy, and we're criticizing our infant for not scoring well on tests yet in high school. It's early on that. But I do agree with some of the things that you are talking about. It is unique on Ephesus Fordham, the dual critique, which is too tall and not tall enough. So we're going to have to find that middle space of what we're wanting out of that district. But it's designed to be dense. It was designed to be dense.
Ben Perry?
Yeah, full disclosure, we're involved in that election project. It's never intended to fit in the surroundings. The surroundings are low-density, 1970s suburban strip mall retail. The point of Ephesus Fordham was to transition the look, feel of that district. You know, you'll have a lot more people walking to Whole Foods from their home now and walking to Trader Joe's and walking to all the other shops, and you'll have some new shops with restaurants. And, you know, over time, it's not going to happen overnight, but, you know, the densification of the district will, over time, it'll fit right in. It's not an abnormally large building. It's, you know, it's six stories. But, you know, we'll see how it evolves.
Jackie Gist.
One part of development that we often leave out is that these exciting new buildings are expensive. They're expensive to live in, and they're expensive to have a store in. I know in Carrboro we pride ourselves on our local living economy, and yet the new buildings, you couldn't have Matt Neal couldn't rent in one of the new buildings. A lot of our small businesses that we're very proud of wouldn't be able to afford the rent there, just like our middle class can't afford the rent in a lot of the houses and apartments that are being built. We work very hard to try to some degree to help low-income people have places to live here, but the middle class is getting pushed out. Do you know that 47% of the American public, according to the Federal Reserve survey, 47% of the American public, and so that's not just poor people, would have trouble coming up with $400 immediately. 50% wouldn't be able to meet a $1,000 emergency room. 500 wouldn't be able to meet a car. So we bend over backwards and try really hard to take care of our low-income people. Nobody's paying attention to the middle class, and they're getting pushed out of buildings, and schools are getting more expensive. So to me, one of the downsides of our bright new development is where does the middle class that built our communities have a place?
Nancy Oates and then Aaron Nelson.
I'm glad you brought up the affordability, because that's something that's near and dear to my heart and something that I want to clear up, because there's been a lot of debate about if we build more expensive rental apartments that somehow will make it more affordable for other people. Supply and demand does not work in the rental market. What works is something, a conversation I had recently with an investor who was talking about how next year he's going to raise all of his rents $100. And I said, did your costs go up? Well, no, they haven't, but there have been more expensive rental units coming on the market that even if he raises his units $100 a month, they will still be attractive because they'll still be less than what the more expensive ones are. And what happens with the expensive rentals is that they raise the floor for all the rentals across town. It doesn't make it more affordable.
Aaron Nelson, I think you have two comments.
In fact, that's not true. So the best thing that happened to affordable housing in Carrboro...
I'm talking middle-class, not...
Okay, the best thing that happened to middle-class housing in Carrboro was new shiny housing in Chapel Hill. The entire 54 corridor was all higher-end student housing, Kingswood, Carolina Apartments, Royal Park, on and on, when I was a student. New stuff got built. Students moved out of it into the new stuff in order to compete. Those places which are no longer student housing, they're now working class, black and brown, blue collar, working class folk all up and down that corridor. And the students, had no new student housing been built, would still be there. They'd have nowhere else to be. They'd still be there. It's also the case that our new housing that we've brought on has caused the cost of the other. This is actually fact. This is a knowable fact. I would love to do the study. We'll jointly do it with Chalt. We can raise the funny. You can money. You can pick the facilitator. But it is a knowable fact. New York Times just did the story. The number one way to build more affordable housing is by building the high-end housing. And this was for real. Whether you like that or not, it is in fact true that when we put up warehouse apartments dropped their price when across the street the new shortbread lofts went up, and they dropped their price to compete, and then a cascading effect of price drop happened across our market. If you build no additional housing, the price will go up. In Boulder, Colorado, the average cost of a home is $900,000. The average cost in our market is $378,000. We have two paths to go. One of them is to add a little supply. It's really hard to build cheap housing. I'll agree with that. But by building some of the other stuff, it's in fact true that it's had negative impact.
I think this might be the first panel that we've had today where people are simultaneously shaking their heads and nodding their heads at the same time. So if you're keeping score at home, Dwight Bassett is nodding his head. Nancy Oates, David Schwartz, and Jackie Gist are shaking their heads. Everyone's got their hand up. Ben Perry, you were first.
Guess I wasn't shaking my head, but I was raising my hand.
You weren't, but yeah, you're the only one.
You know, only recently have we had any new buildings, residential buildings like this. You know, we had a big gap in Chapel Hill where there were no buildings built. So by that theory, if you know the housing should have been, if new expensive housing makes other housing more expensive, then previous to that, those new buildings coming online, wouldn't you have thought that our housing was more reasonable? Well, if you look at the older apartment communities in Chapel Hill, They were more expensive than comparable properties in Durham or Raleigh by 15-20%. Take, for example, the apartments in Southern Village or Meadowmont. You know, 10 to 15-year-old vintage garden-style apartments in that nature are just way, way, way more expensive in Chapel Hill than they are in those other markets, because those other markets, the people who can afford to pay more and are willing to pay more for newer, nicer, you know, have that opportunity. So, but in Chapel Hill, they didn't for so long. So they were occupying those older model units.
Jackie Gist has a question. Before we do, for the people who specialize in housing and for people who are having the supply and demand conversation, is it wrong to focus exclusively on Chapel Hill? Because we've also got Carborough, Orange County, Durham, we've got a larger housing market. Are we wrong to focus just on Chapel Hill? Nancy says yes.
Well, I certainly wasn't focusing on Chapel Hill.
Well, no. Chapel Hill, Carborough, I mean, sorry.
No, the housing growth in northern Chatham will have big impact also on cost of housing in Chapel Hill and Carborough.
In this conversation, Aaron, when you talk about those apartments, that's great. And those are now available for working class people. Who I'm talking about are people who are in the third quarter. You know, now to be a middle class family, you need to be making $120,000 as a family. I'm talking about not the people who are making $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, and those apartments are great for them. I'm talking about the people who are making 60, 70, 80, 90. And those are the people who are being squeezed out. And you talk about, you build apartments, and those are the students that you're talking about. And then students are also coming into Carborough, and we're getting studentification in Carborough where people are building houses that have 5-6 bedrooms that rent for $500-$600 a bedroom. That's driving out the middle class, as it's also having a negative impact. So, yes, we try with our low-income families. It's the people in the third quarter that are being pushed out in our community.
David, did you have a – yeah.
Aaron, if I heard you correctly, you said – that the best way to increase affordable housing is to... Can you repeat what you said?
No, I was quoting a study done by faculty.
Uh-huh.
I'll send you the link. It's the New York Times reported on it, but it said the number... And the headline was provocative. It said the number one way to build... to build housing for poor people is to build housing for rich people. That's the headline. The story is really interesting, and it talks about that by creating places for folks to move out of older housing, that older housing then moderates in price, more akin to the price it should be, but it was artificially propped up when there was no place else for those folks to go.
So two things. One, I think that on its face, the best way to build housing for low-income people is to build housing for low-income people directly.
Cabrini Green would disagree with that. We've done, by design, affordable housing in inner cities terribly. So that was a terrible way to do, by design, affordable housing.
Well, if you don't maintain it and you don't enforce safety and security, then it creates an unhealthy environment. But
agreed.
On its face, the best way to build housing for low-income people is to directly build housing for low-income people, as Chapel Hill is doing the DHIC project up on Legion Road. Now, let's take a real-world example of what this article seems to suggest is going to happen. You build some new housing, and then the old housing, people move out of the old housing, those who can move out of the older, less appealing housing into the new stuff, and then the older housing becomes less expensive. Except that in Chapel Hill, that doesn't happen. What happens in Chapel Hill is when a new apartment goes up and people who can afford to move into that one, then an investor like Eller Capital comes in, buys the older stuff, does some cosmetic upgrades, and then raises the price and squeezes out the people who used to be able to afford to live there. So in Chapel Hill, whatever might be the case in that New York Times article, we have seen in Chapel Hill that the construction of new high-end housing absolutely does not increase the supply of lower-priced housing. In fact, it makes it disappear faster.
It's a great story, David. It's just not true. So a firefighter married to a first-year teacher. First-year teacher makes 32, married to a firefighter making 33. Let's say they make 60. If you make $60,000 a year, you can afford to spend $1,300 by the affordability standard of 30% of your pre-tax dollars on housing. Eller Capital did his upgrades, and still all of it is less than that. It is for rent for $950 to $1,150, and that is affordable to a single person making $45,000. If you want to change the standard of what affordability means, the accepted national standard that we use in this market about what affordability means, we can do that. We can talk about affordable for people who make 20% of median income. And Jackie, I totally agree. We're going to have to do, and David, some by design housing. But we're also going to have to find some strategies to harness not only our millions of dollars like that, but some market forces. It's going to be a both and strategy. But to say to build the new housing causes the other stuff to go up just isn't true. It just isn't. And so supply and demand works better than almost anything in this market. If you were to add 4,000 new residential units, I guarantee you the Southern Village apartments would drop their rates by hundreds of dollars. They'd have to in order to compete with the new product.
Let me actually jump in really quick, because we've got to take a quick break. Ben Perry's had his hand up forever, but I'm going to get to you after the break, because I have a question for you, and then I know you have about 12 comments to make. I want to turn it back to David, because I used to live in that Eller building, and now I live in Durham, because you might be able to afford it for $900, but you can afford something better in Durham. But at the same time, that's not new housing, right? That's taking the old housing that would have been moderated in value and upgrading it, so now it's no longer going to moderate in value. So I think it's two different issues. So if those units were not bought up and retrofitted and upgraded, and they had been able to moderate in value, as Aaron is suggesting that they are, would that address the problem?
Yes, if they had not been bought up and the price raised on them, then the price would be lower. It stands to reason. But that's not what happens. What happens is someone comes in and sees an opportunity to make some money by doing some cosmetic upgrades and raising the price. So it's just not true to say that by increasing the supply of whatever kind of housing, we're going to lower the price across the entire housing market. Most of the economic research that I've read suggests that there is not a single unitary housing market. There are lots of sub-markets. And so while supply and demand, the sort of Econ 101 principles of supply and demand, do operate within a sub-market, if you build more new luxury housing, then the price of other luxury housing will go down. But supply and demand doesn't work across sub-markets. That increasing the supply of luxury housing doesn't somehow reduce the cost of non-luxury housing. And what we've got a shortage of in Chapel Hill is not luxury housing, believe me. What we've got a shortage of is housing that teachers and hospital workers can afford.
This will bear out, and we'll find out. But in 2007, we called every apartment complex in town, and we asked them what their rent rate was, and we just called them again a decade later. And the older units stayed the same. So they held price over a decade. How is that possible? Well, because we added some product. We added some things into the, maybe it's 15 years. We've been adding some product into the market to help absorb. Students, we built some stuff on campus. We all agree that building housing on campus helps reduce the pressure and lowers price. So why do we think that building it off campus has somehow the opposite effect?
Send us your questions and your comments, hashtag WCHL Forum. We're going to take a quick break. I promise we're going to get to Ben Perry first. When we come back, you're listening to our panel on development. This is going to be one of those commercial breaks where we're going to want to keep the microphones on, but we won't. So all of the amazing comments that you're going to hear in the next 2 minutes, we're going to hear it, but you won't. But we'll come back with a lot more. You're listening to the WCHL Community Forum. Dwight Bassett, Ben Perry, David Schwartz, Jackie Gist, Aaron Nelson, Nancy Oates. We'll be back after this.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit.
To foodies.
To innovation.
To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
Summer is rapidly approaching, and fall will be here before you know it. Need some extra courses to help you prepare for college? Need to complete your high school diploma or get a GED? Looking for training or certification to help you get that dream job? Classes begin May 16th, so visit durhamtech.edu and search summer registration. Schedule a meeting with an academic advisor who will give you access to our web registration system. You'll be amazed at the great selection of interesting courses you'll find. And get ready to do great things.
The Telephone Reassurance Program gives peace of mind to seniors who live alone. This free program provides a morning safety check phone call between 8 and 9:30 Monday through Friday. If calls go unanswered after three tries, this is relayed to the Department on Aging Transition staff for follow-up. To receive telephone reassurance calls, contact the Aging Transitions Helpline at 919-968-2087. To become a telephone reassurance volunteer, call the Volunteer Connect office at 919-245-4244.
Welcome back to the 2016 WCHL Community Forum presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Thanks to our sponsors, Brooke Pierce, Chapel Hill Downtown Partnership, Durham Tech, Jersey Mike's, Kidzoo Children's Museum, Maria Finnegan Fitness, Molly Maid of Chapel Hill, and Orange County Government. Once again, here's Aaron Keck.
Welcome back to the 2016 WCHL Community Forum. Again, we are joined by six distinguished panelists. We've had a great conversation already. We're going to keep continuing it over the course of the rest of the hour. Dwight Bassett, Ben Perry, David Schwartz, Nancy Oates, Aaron Nelson, and Jackie Gist. We're talking development, hashtag WCHL Forum if you want to send us your questions and comments via Twitter. We've got a couple of them that I've gotten over the break. We'll try to get to those in the second half of the hour. Getting to Ben Perry, who's had his hand up forever and needing to weigh in. One of the comments that the issues that we've been talking about is we've got a lot of housing being built that's higher end. Where is the housing for affordable? Where is the housing for mid-range people of mid-range income? Jackie just mentioned that. I have heard, and you can corroborate this or not, that it's almost not cost, or maybe drop the almost, it's not cost feasible for developers to build anything but higher end luxury housing in Chapel Hill because of the cost of space and other assorted costs. So if that is the case, and speak to that as well, what actually would make it cost feasible? Otherwise, we can't have this conversation at all.
Well, I'm going to let your listeners in on a deep, dark secret held in the apartment development industry. Luxury apartments is a marketing term. They are very nice, don't get me wrong, but they are also very, very small. So most of the people you have living in those apartments, even the new ones, are people who are in the maybe upper half of the income profile that Jackie was describing earlier. So, you know, the renovated Eller units are affordable to people making $50,000, $60,000. The Alexan apartments are targeted more to people making maybe $70,000, $80,000. Now, I'm not going to suggest that it's a great housing option for a family with two or three kids. I mean, they're small units. They're units for people who want to have a place to sleep, a kitchen to cook the occasional meal, and then have lots of community common areas to get out of their unit, their home, and be social. So they're highly amenitized in that regard, but the units themselves are very, very small. Therefore, they don't rent for that huge a number. So they are, yes, they are luxury apartments by marketing term, and they are very nice. But, you know, people making $100,000 plus, for the most part, are homeowners, mm-hmm. frankly. Apartments in general are serving that kind of middle-income demographic.
Aaron Nelson?
I have some corrections to offer, and whoever's been lighting me up. So first it's the Washington Post and not the New York Times. The second thing is it's a study throughout all of California looking at some areas, but the headline still is fantastic. The poor are better off when we build more housing for the rich.
Don't you love an academic community?
It's not mine. But I wanted to clarify also, we must build more affordable housing designed for affordability. It's just not making enough gains. We'll make really more gains by adding some of those key supply issues in. And I think that we have to get clarity as a community. We should be clear. We need 2,000 units priced between $750 and $950. If that's, I just made that up. But if that's the goal, let's say it. Let's all agree. Let's start crossing them off as we get them. Let's do an annual housing survey. In Boulder, Colorado, annual housing survey, the goal is 10% permanently affordable. But they count them. We don't even count anymore. So this is a problem we can address. We should get at it. This debate is supposed to be about development. I did get a fantastic article just sent to me about supply and demand denialism, and that as a movement in the country. So some of these facts we'll solve offline, but I do appreciate the opportunity to talk about them.
Nancy Yards.
One of the points that Ben made a while back was you can't look just at supply and demand, because the other factor is how much people will pay for it. And, for instance, in New York City, where I lived 20 years ago, there's no way I would be able to afford to live there now, even though a lot more apartments have been built in New York City. But what happened was you had a change in the financial structure down on Wall Street, and all of a sudden you had people who were getting mm-hmm. year-end bonuses of $10 million. Mm-hmm. Well, then the prices of apartments went up, and I think that's one of the things that we have to watch in Chapel Hill, is that we have to make a concerted effort to make room for the people who work here. Agreed. To be able to live here.
David Schwartz.
I don't know that we need to spend a whole lot more time in this hour talking about housing, because Chapel Hill, at least, has over 6,000 new housing units already approved. And at historical growth rates, that's going to last us 15, 20 years. So maybe we can move on and talk about how to make this a great town for all those new people who are going to come and move into these units that have already been approved.
It's a great pivot. We grow at 1.5% per year. That's about 750 people per year. That's about 3 green bridges a year of growth. The stuff we have coming will last us maybe 8, 9 years, a decade. But I like where Nancy was going. Now let's pivot towards great commercial development.
Dwight Bassett is in the room. You had your hour, but we've got to speak to development, because this isn't just about housing. This is about commercial development. This is about retail development. This is about developing manufacturing in Chapel Hill, in Carrboro, in Orange County. And a lot of times we talk about development, we tend to sort of fade into talking about it as a trade-off. Oh, we need to focus on affordable, or we need to focus on housing versus we need to focus on commercial. But is that necessarily the case? What do we need to focus on in terms of development in order to make Chapel Hill and Carrboro and Orange County the livable place that we want?
So first off, we have a really long unmet demand for office and retail in our market. We've gone a long time without a lot of new product. Last was Castilla and Matamont from an office perspective. When you compare Orange County to Wake and Durham County and a 50 million square foot office market, Chapel Hill should have a 5 million square foot office market, and we have less than 50% of that. In the last segment, we talked about we're losing 50% of our retail, so we could essentially double our retail and double our office market and still be capturing only our fair share. The most important component of this is not the space, but that we move to a time where we're focused on retaining talent and creating jobs for internships and for the future. We've watched a lot of jobs leave in recent years, and it's time that we turned the tables and became a welcoming place and provided those opportunities for companies not only to start here, but to stay here and grow here long term.
Jackie, just.
I know in Carrboro we've had several places start and then go to Durham, just like we've had a lot of wonderful young people start and go to Durham. Of course, Durham's now facing gentrification too, so that's an issue. An idea that we've kicked around in Carrboro and hasn't come full bloom yet is kind of a corollary to the affordable housing regulations, which say that X percentage of the units in order to get some higher density need to be affordable housing. And why can't we, when we're building office commercial, say we'll give you in Carrboro, they won't believe I'm saying this, we'll give you another floor if that one floor, that the extra floor, is at an affordable rate, so that businesses that felt like they had to go, or young entrepreneurs, or places that used to be able to afford Carrboro but now can't. So if we had the same thing for commercial as we have for housing, that may be a way of keeping people here and attracting not just very, very nice franchises.
Nancy Oates?
We'd like, on town council, we'd like to get more, get the word out that we would like to have some commercial, light industrial, and office space projects. What we've been getting recently is apartments, because I think that's where the financing, it's mm-hmm. easier to get financing mm-hmm. for a builder to do apartments, perhaps, than office space. But I'd love to hear what Ben has to say about
Ben Perry, yeah.
Sure. It's it has been easier for the past few years. That's starting to turn a little bit. It's actually getting harder to finance residential development mm-hmm. going forward, just because they're not in Chapel Hill necessarily, but there's been a lot built elsewhere in the country. The office, it's the financing's there. It's not hard to get financing. It's hard to get financing for a spec office building. You have to be able to attract. You have to be able to start the building with a commitment from a tenant or multiple tenants who have already taken roughly half of the building. And Chapel Hill, for so many years, had the other the complete 180 attitude about commercial and residential, and we shunned the commercial. And for more residential, we missed out on a lot of those bigger tenants. So, now we don't have the space because the space wasn't built to accommodate those bigger tenants. So we don't have those bigger tenants who move around and say, all right, well, I've been here for 10 years. I'm a 30,000-foot tenant. I want to get into a new building. I'll go, work with this developer over here to build a nice, shiny new building. And vacate my 30,000 feet here, so now that's a more affordable 30,000-foot chunk that owner has to go fill. So I'm digressing a little bit, but the trouble with the office, and we also have a lot of office approved. Glenn Lennox has a ton of office space approved. Obi Creek has a bunch of office space approved. I'm sure there's some in Carrboro as well. But we don't have the large tenants who can plan for their space 2, 3, 4 years out to wait for a building to be built, coming here to commit. And fortunately now we have approved space, and hopefully developers working with Dwight and others can start to recruit them.
Aaron Nelson, and then Jackie Gist.
Right. So we talked in this last election, some folks thought that there was just a little bit of a putting on the reverse thrusters on some of the growth and development. But maybe that's where this new council will go, though we're very excited to hear how welcoming they've been, and you, Nancy, for new economic development opportunities. Even if you slowed down what you approved coming up, we have approved a lot, right? So we have ordered a whole lot of product into the market. I think the pivot we now need to make is into recruitment, which has never been where we thought. We thought we're awesome, and you, of course, want to be here, so we don't need to work very hard to bring you. And now we're going to do more traditional economic development that most towns do, which is that they have space, and then they go looking for tenant. Our economic development has all been about moving dirt. Most economic development professionals don't spend a lot of time on land use. They spend their time on recruiting tenants and retaining and helping people grow and providing technical assistance. So it's a new era, I think, for economic development in our community, where we're aligning more with council, the chamber, economic development, the county, which is how are we going to bring in the tenants to get these buildings up out of the ground. If you need to have a 50% commitment, then we're going to have to go find some folks.
Jackie Gist.
We had some very nice office space that was new office space that took a long time to rent. One of the things I'm hearing, and that I heard a couple years ago as well, is that we are not Class A, is it Class A, office space because we're not adjacent to an airport and we're not adjacent to a major freeway. And so that we need to be looking more at other kinds of big, like not the big ones, but kind of startups and locally owned, because the big ones don't really want to come here because we don't have that. I heard that from we had an economic
development. There's some of that. Class A is usually about amenities. Is there a door person who greets you? What are the floors made out of? The quality of the finishes? Some of that stuff. Labor shed really matters. If you're in downtown Carrboro, the commute shed, you know, if they're going to draw 400 employees from where, how long is it to get there? Mm-hmm. They have to drive all the way through Chapel Hill to make it happen. So labor shed is going to be one of our big things in terms of drawing. But I think out the 54 corridor north of Carrboro up by 40, that you'll have some opportunities for more headquarter tenants. And I think Fleet Feet has proven that to you. And we know in Chapel Hill, Blue Cross Blue Shield and other places show us that if you're close enough to some of the labor, we can bring in some incredible headquarters.
Let me ask Ben Perry again. There are a lot of sources of cost for developers, and obviously when we talk about development and what should we do in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Orange County, none of it can happen unless it's cost feasible for the developer. So what are the factors driving up the cost for developers to build some of the projects that we're talking about, some of the projects that we want, and what would need to happen to make things more cost feasible?
It's a variety of factors. Certainly land is expensive. We have an urban services growth boundary. I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon, nor do I necessarily think it should. But what land there is, that is more expensive. Redevelopment, which happens when you limit your growth horizontally, you have to do it up, and so you end up with redevelopment. And so that's, to tear down an existing building that produces income to replace it with a bigger building that produces more income is just more costly. There is... certainly, the entitlement process is lengthy and expensive. We have a project in Durham, one that's very similar to the Alexan apartment building in Chapel Hill, almost on the exact same time frame. We got them approved and entitled about the same time. The Alexan project was in the Ephesus Fordham district that was designed to be quick, easy, and not as expensive. We did a comparison of the fees to get through the town entitlement for the Alexan project in Chapel Hill and a very similar project in Durham. In Chapel Hill, it was $1.2 million. In Durham, it was $275,000. So that's a pretty big difference in the district of Chapel Hill that was supposed to be fast, cheap, and easy.
That's not your time cost. That's actually checks written for fees.
That is dollars, yeah. That has no time value of money in it, if you will.
So were those just different permitting fees? And
yeah, application fees, stormwater fees, impact fees. And it's not all Chapel Hill. Some of it's Orange County. Some of it's the school system. It's a mixed bag. Some of it's OWASA. It's not all under the control of the Chapel Hill government. But, that's what the sum of those parts equaled up to.
Nancy Oates?
And on council, we're making some changes in the inspections and permitting because we have heard that it's very difficult and much more expensive in Chapel Hill. One of the other things that drives up costs, I think, is the last-minute negotiating that we have between developers and town council. And any time you start negotiating from the dais, the town loses because you can't have nine people who don't agree trying to negotiate with one developer who is very focused on what he wants.
Dwight Bassett, I want to hear from you. You're talking to developers all the time. What are you hearing from them in terms of obstacles to development or things that are driving up their costs?
So actually take it back to 2010. We did a housing study. And I think that in that housing study, we try to look at where the costs get associated with making projects so much more expensive. And a lot of them have been expressed here, but the important thing to me was we simply looked at land costs in Cary and Durham and Chapel Hill, unentitled, without infrastructure, and without roads. And the prices were relative in the same region. But when we added entitlement, when we added infrastructure, and we added roads, and all the costs that we expect every development to carry, our land nearly doubled in value. So it's kind of hard to make affordable when we're pushing a process that drives that price up. And so until we decide as a community, and quite frankly, that means that Owosso needs to be at the table. Every provider needs to be at the table. And we decide we want some priorities to happen, and we all agree that here are the parameters we think we need to set to make that happen. You know, the reality is East-West Partners is in business to make a profit, good, bad, or indifferent, whether you like that or not. They are a business. And we cannot expect every developer to carry the values of our community 100%. And there has been a period of time where we haven't always invested in ourselves, and this is one of those times where I think we have to stop and think about how we want to be in the future and figure out how to strategically get there by being cautious and not creating unintended consequences.
Jackie Gist, you had a follow-up.
Well, I was just like one of our developers in Carrboro who has been dancing with us for a long time around one particular project. He said, if affordable housing is a community value, then why are we the only business that has to pay for it? And I thought that made a great deal of sense. You know, I agree with how we do affordable housing in Carrboro, but we need to maybe up the benefits to the people who are building it. And he said, this happens to be how I make my living. You don't charge a baker extra money for affordable housing. So it was a good argument.
Aaron Nelson.
I agree with that. Affordable housing is one of the only things that we put on a single user. We don't ask you to put extra space in your building for a library or to house a police officer space for an officer to sit. But we decide that the taxes that you pay will pay for things that we find valuable. And so the notion that you would put a penny for affordable housing or more seems to be a much fairer way to prioritize. If this is important to us, let's fund it the way that we fund everything else, by budgeting for it and paying for it.
Nancy Ertz?
We have an inclusionary zoning law, but so far, since that's passed, the only developer who has been held to that is an out-of-state developer who did not have a local fixer to mediate and perhaps didn't understand that he could negotiate and wouldn't have to pay for the entire thing.
Ben Perry's hand shot up in the air.
That's simply not true. East 54 has double the amount of affordable housing than the ordinance requires.
Yeah, you guys did
20%. That was before the affordable housing, the inclusionary zoning. I really appreciate that you did that before you had to legally.
Okay.
We got a few minutes left, maybe a little bit more than five, so everyone's got about a minute left. I don't know how to. I was all worried about this, this not having enough questions to ask for this panel, and there's so much left to say and to ask. But I wanted to go around the circle one more time. What is the biggest challenge in our community to getting the development that we want, whatever that is, whatever form that takes, and what? Just in a few seconds, can our community do to eliminate or at least mitigate that obstacle? Let's start with Nancy Oates.
I think we need a land use plan so that when we think about the kind of development that we want, we can be very purposeful about it, and we can tell people this is what we want here and this is exactly what we expect, and not start playing developers like a piece of cheese on a string.
Aaron Nelson?
I like that.
I like that, too. The cheese on the string is really
good. Well, the cheese on the string didn't get as much, but making a plan and then following through on it. Jess Anderson talked about that on an earlier panel, and you two have both been championing that. The development community would love that. Say what you want, and we will bring that to you, rather than we fight about absolutely everything each and every time. I think we'll also get there by talking about our interests and not our position. Nancy says she's for more commercial development. David says the same. Dwight says the same. I said, now we're talking about what our interests are. Let's work on how to do that. We devolve sometimes into position, four stories, three stories, close to the road, not close to the road. And I think that that pulls us apart. So talking more about our interests, I think will really get us on the same page to getting what we want.
Jackie Gist.
We need to remember that we are a whole and stop acting like separate pieces. I'm from Carrboro, so I can talk that way. And that means that what the county does, what Owosso does, what the schools do, what the university does, what the state does, all of those pieces come into play in affecting the cost of housing and the cost of commercial development. And so until we all come together and say this is all of us and stop pretending that it's just the developer or it's just the towns, we're not going to get anywhere. It's not going to work. So we have to act like a whole and be here now.
David Schwartz.
I think that the ambiguity of the term development sometimes trips us up, that the word development, one of its connotations is betterment, community betterment, that we are developing, mm-hmm. we're becoming better. But then another connotation is land use intensification, where there was a single family house, now we have an apartment, where there was a parking lot, now we have a hotel. And sometimes intensifying our use of a particular piece of land advances the goal of bettering the community, but not always. It doesn't always. And I think we need to keep those two different senses of development clear in our minds. And whenever we are contemplating a particular proposed intensification of land use, we need to really ask ourselves, is this something that's going to advance the goal of making this a better community, or is it simply going to give us more of something that we perhaps don't need?
Ben Perry.
I'm going to challenge the premise of the question, that we even know as a community, or we agree, I should say we agree as a community, what we want our development to look like. You know, I think you have 50% of the population has one vision, 50% has another vision, and you see that battled out in election years. You know, I think there are some shared values we have, developers, CHALT, and everybody in between. You know, we'd all like to see more green space. We'd all like to see more affordable housing, but you know, Nancy's idea of a cohesive plan about how we're going to go about that, and where, you know, every project can't deliver on every goal. You know, where are we going to address this problem? Where are we going to address that problem? And you know, we like to think we're creative when we look into development, and if we can address one problem, we usually can. If we're asked to address 10, that's where it unravels.
Dwight Bassett.
So I'm going to shock David and tell him how much I agree with his statement. last summer, we had a conversation with Rod Stevens, a consultant that's helped council. We have a draft commercial development strategy, which is to carry us out the next few years with economic development. And while I don't think it's my primary job, I think placemaking is critical. And it's not just in new areas. It's as much spending time making our downtown better and more functional. And so I just wanted to share that with David so he understands that I agree very much that we're not probably there yet on placemaking, but hopefully we'll get there. So that's not my comment, but I wanted to share that. my comment is being cautious to balance. We have notoriously championed ideas in this community that have created unintended consequences. And I know a couple of years ago at a council retreat, there was a question related to economic development. And the council at that point, I was on one of the subcommittees with a couple of council members, and they thought Dwight's going to answer the question, so we don't have to work on ours. But the idea was that, you know, my input was we need to be more cautious about our decisions making. And when we get to a decision point, we understand both the intended and the unintended, and decide that we're willing to accept the unintended if that's the path it goes, so that we're more direct in what our output is in the future.
And that is going to just about do it. We've got a couple minutes left. I've got one more question to ask, and I think this goes to Nancy and Ben. We were talking about housing earlier. We were talking about apartments and condos and things like that, and you mentioned, Ben, that if you're talking about physical homes, houses, that's more for the upscale people making $100,000 a year, so we didn't touch on it then. But the housing supply in Chapel Hill, one more thing when it comes to development, is fairly old when it comes to comparing to other communities in the Triangle. And that's been an issue as well for realtors. A lot of them have brought that up, and construction companies are bringing this up. What can we do as developers, as town council members, as economic development people, for those in the room, to get newer housing supply in terms of just standalone houses in Chapel Hill?
I don't think we necessarily need newer housing supply. I think there's a value in preserving the older housing. One of the problems that we have with that, for instance, is a builder was telling me that he had to wait more than a month to get a building permit to renovate a bathroom. Mm-hmm. And this is a problem. One of the things we did not touch on today, but I really want people to start thinking about, is planning for housing for senior citizens. And I say that as somebody who just qualified recently for my own Harris Teeter nice. Senior discount card.
Only on Thursdays.
You never know what to look at.
No. Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I think Nancy's pretty much right. I mean, if we're talking about single-family home ownership, there's no land inside the urban services growth boundary left for that. There are no more Metamonts. There are no more Southern Villages coming. New housing is going to be denser, certainly on the home ownership side. You know, if a condo market comes back, then that can be built.
If you're going to build a new house to replace an old house, you're going to replace a
affordable by Chapel Hill standards house with $1 million house. Mm-hmm. There's not any land to put new houses on.
20 seconds, Aaron Nelson.
The average age of a $300,000 home in our community is 1985. The average age of a $300,000 home in Wake County is 2005. And so that's what we're going to compete against for that same buyer is going to choose Formica or Granite. And that's going to be tough. So I think, Nancy, you're right on making it easier and faster for people to renovate. Will help us compete if we don't have place for some new ownership.
And that is unfortunately going to have to do it. I know the conversation is going to continue. Chapel Hill Carver Chamber of Commerce and Chapel Hill Alliance for a Livable Town will work together on that study. We've gotten some questions about it via Twitter over the course of the hour, so we want that study to come
out. And I'd like all your listeners to go to the Indy Weekly website and vote for Chalt as the best in the Triangle local activist organization.
All right.
You didn't have to pay for that ad.
Thanks again to Nancy Oates, Aaron Nelson, Jackie Giss, David Schwartz, Ben Perry, Dwight Bassett. This has been a terrific conversation. It continues after this hour and beyond. You can visit our website, chapelboro.com, get the full conversation once again on our website, and we'll be re-airing it over the course of the next couple of weeks. The 2016 WCHL Community Forum continues. A lot more to come after this.
This year's WCHL Community Forum has been presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Thanks again to our sponsors, Brooke Pierce, Chapel Hill Downtown Partnership, Durham Tech, Jersey Mike's, Kidzoo Children's Museum, Maria Finnegan Fitness, Molly Maid of Chapel Hill, and Orange County Government.
Hi, I'm Dwight Bassett with Chapel Hill Economic Development, and we're thrilled to be the presenting sponsor for this year's WCHL Community Forum. The Economic Development Office works to attract and retain businesses and jobs in locations convenient to transit and housing, all in an effort to build a sustainable economy in which to live, work, and play. Chapel Hill is open to business and open for business every day of the year. Follow us on Twitter at @CHEconDev. Chapel Hill, right on the edge of the Triangle.
Brooks Pierce Law Firm is a proud sponsor of the WCHL Community Forum and a proud supporter of the Chapel Hill Carborough Chamber of Commerce. Our lawyers strive to provide excellent legal counsel in business and nonprofit matters, including employment, tax-exempt organizations, construction, intellectual property protection, and litigation. Find out how we can help your enterprise at brookspierce.com.
Kids Who Children's Museum in Chapel Hill is proud to sponsor the WCHL Community Forum because of the way it informs and empowers all community members. We like to do the same for children and families, nurturing curiosity, creativity, and self-directed learning. We call it inspired learning through creative play. With programs and experiences for children infant to tween and the adults who care for them, Kids Who Children's Museum at University Place in Chapel Hill, your community's resource for learning through play.
Chapel Hill Downtown Partnership is proud to sponsor the WCHL Community Forum. The conversations of the forum aim to inform and empower community members, and as downtown's economic development leader, we strive to do the same for the downtown business community. Downtown offers a thriving local arts and cultural community, hosts world-renowned dining, and serves as the gathering spot for young and old. To learn more, head online and visit www.downtownchapelhill.com.